Right now, I am honored to have on the show the latest installment of the Marquette basketball, well, the Hall of Fame, Sports Hall of Fame. And it is Jim McElvain joins us on the line. Jim, good morning. Welcome into the show.
Morning. Thank you. I'm not the only one. There's 77 of us now, and I think 8 of us went in last night.
That was a special class last night. I know from the men's basketball team, and there was you and Jarrell McNeil. I know Jimmy Butler was there, and just talk about the night and how special that was for you and what it meant for you.
It was shocking to me. I didn't, you know, when I spent 7 years in the NBA and retired, I immediately became a lifetime member. I paid the extra money to become a lifetime member of the Retired NBA Players Association. Because it's, I'm, you know, kind of a geek like that, like you probably would be. It's like, hey, I get a chance to hang out with retired NBA players for the rest of my life if I join this group. And you know, I'm sitting in one of those meetings, and Bill Walton's going around doing TV interviews, and he comes over and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, Jim McElvain, NBA legend. And I'm like, now hold on, Bill. I'm first shocked that you even know my name. I'm flattered that you think I'm a legend. But there's thousands of guys who play in the NBA, and you're one of the guys that's actually a legend. And you were an all-star and you won championships. I kind of felt that way about Marquette. You know, there's thousands of student-athletes who went there and did amazing things, and I kind of felt like, you know, the legends were defined by how much better they were than all the other ones. And it was like, I did some good things, but I never won a championship. I never got to a Final Four. We had a losing record my freshman year. But I, you know, the way I talked about my experience at Marquette really last night focused on where we started as a team and where we ended by my senior year. And it felt like it was very transitional for us while we were at Marquette, where the program was not in good shape when we got there, and we left it in much better shape afterwards, and the success that I actually paralleled to the current state of some other Catholic university programs has really been phenomenal, and I'm really proud of what everybody after me has done to raise it to the next level, and they certainly have.
Jim McElvain, Marquette great, inducted into the Marquette Hall of Fame last night, joins us here on Sports Fan 1330. And I know in doing some research on you, it wasn't an easy decision for you to go to Marquette. I know you were from St. Catherine and Racine, and, you know, there were other programs that looked at you as well. But really it was kind of when Kevin O'Neill came in as head coach that really ultimately got you there, right?
It was. A lot of my friends from St. Catharines were going to Marquette, and they were recruiting me heavily and gave me tickets as they were allowed to with the NCAA. So I went to the games with my friends who were going to go to Marquette, because for them it was the best seats they were ever going to have for Marquette games, and they had a great time. But I really had no intention of going there. I told them that. And they're like, well, I'll just go to the games anyway. I just didn't want to waste their time. I told UW-Madison the same thing. I just wasn't interested in staying somewhere cold. I wanted to go somewhere warm. And finally, when I get my house sold this year, I'm going to head to Florida and go somewhere warm. It took me a while, but Kevin O'Neill was recruiting me at Arizona, and that was one of the schools that I was considering. I had a relationship with him, and when he left Arizona, he immediately started recruiting me when he was at Marquette. And Damon Key and I played on the same AAU team and had quite a bit of success for a bunch of kids from Wisconsin when we're on a national stage playing against, even at that time in the 1980s, it was mega teams. It wasn't an Indiana team. It was a team with kids from Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and maybe one or two from Michigan. And we were going out and more than holding our own against everybody else in the country. So that perspective against top Division I, future Division I NBA players made me think that, well, if Damon and I can do this at this level, I think we can do it at the next level. And I knew Rob was an outstanding player from Janesville, and I thought we had the potential to do something really special at Marquette.
And you did, and you had a great career there, and then you went on and you were drafted in the second round by the Washington Bullets at the time, now the Wizards, and you had a productive 7-year career. I know, I think what Shaquille O'Neal was one of the first guys you went up against. You know, what was it like playing against guys that maybe you had looked up to during your high school and college career?
It was a surreal experience, and not specifically with Shaq, but to be a rookie in the NBA, you know, if you want to put the timeline together, you're essentially 5 years removed from being a high school kid with a poster in your bedroom wall of the guys you're now expected to guard. And that was the surreal experience for me, because Hakeem was on my wall when I was in high school.
Sure.
And now I had to guard Hakeem and David Robinson and Patrick Ewing and all those guys that I had grown up watching. And that was the surreal experience. But that only lasts for a couple seconds, because you really have to focus on trying to figure out a way to stop those guys. But, you know, it may sound weird. I loved playing against Shaq. And if I had my druthers, I would have played against Shaq every single night. And sometimes people are like, well, why would you do that? Because Scott Skiles, when he came up to Washington during my rookie season, he was traded up there. He had played with Shaq. And he said there were centers from the other teams. They used to joke about it on the Magic, that the Shaq flu, they called it. And centers from other teams would come up with mysterious, you know, leg cramps or some kind of pull or strain that was hard to diagnose. But they definitely felt it, and they missed the game against Shaq because they were afraid he'd dunk on them and embarrass them and all that. And it's like, well, you know what? Shaq is really good, and he's supposed to score 30 points a night. So if he has 30 points on me, then, you know, that was an average night for him. And if I can hold him under 30, then I did something well. But if I can give up 30 points to him, but he has to take, you know, 30 shots to do it, then I'm doing pretty well, because he should shoot way better than 50% from the floor. So, you know, that was who I look forward to playing the most. And the guy, and I told him when we were both hanging out in the Retired Players Association meeting, the guy I wanted to play against the least was A.C. Earl. Because A.C. Earl could go out and put up 4 points, and everybody would be like, yeah, man, that's A.C. Earl. And then the next night he could have 36 points. So you never know which A.C. Earl you were going to get. And I just wanted to make sure I was going to get the A.C. Earl that wasn't red hot.
You know, Jim, talking about your time in the league, you spent a couple years in Seattle playing for the Supersonics. You know, they've since moved and gone to Oklahoma City as the Thunder. Some rumblings about maybe the NBA expanding, going back to Seattle. Would you like to see that happen? And what kind of basketball town was Seattle when you were there for the few years?
Absolutely. They deserve it. I feel terrible to this day that the NBA basically used Seattle as a legitimate, credible threat to every other NBA city, that if you don't do what we want you to do, you're going to end up like Seattle and you're going to lose your franchise. And they did the, you know, same thing happened in Milwaukee. If you don't build that new arena and you don't build the nice arena and things don't go the way we want it to, we're going to have to take that franchise away from you. It's going to have to go somewhere else, or they're going to sell it to somebody who's going to move it to another city. And so it really angers me, because Seattle didn't deserve that. Seattle deserved to keep their team. I was really disappointed in Howard Schultz, the guy who started Starbucks, that he owned the team, made so much money off of that team, and then sold it to a group that he knew was going to move it to Oklahoma City. And you know, you got to give Senator Cole a lot of credit. He may have only bought the Bucks for $17 million and probably made a bunch of money off of them when he sold them, but he made sure he took his time. He had plenty of opportunities to sell the Bucks to an ownership group that would have moved them out of Milwaukee. He didn't have to give any money to the construction of the new arena, but he gave more than, and he didn't build the new arena, but for what he gave to build the new arena in Milwaukee, it cost more than that. You know, it cost far less than that to build the Bradley Center. So he poured a bunch of money back into that new building and made sure the Bucks were a solid franchise set to stay in Milwaukee for the long haul. So shame on Howard Schultz to this day. I don't go to Starbucks because of what he did to Seattle and the fans of the Sonics there.
Wow. Marquette, great. Jim McElvain joins us here on Sports Fan 1330. He was inducted into the Marquette Hall of Fame last night, along with a number of great former athletes. Hey, you know, one thing when people talk about your NBA career, Jim, they talk about the time that you blocked a Michael Jordan dunk. Is that special to you at all? What did that mean to you? And do people still bring that up to you to this day?
I'll be honest, I had forgotten that I did that until that awesome guy in France or wherever he is put that video on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I've since reached out to him and promised him if he ever comes to whatever city I'm in the U.S., I will buy him the nicest steak dinner he's ever had. You know, I didn't have a stellar NBA career because, you know what, they're the best basketball players in the world. And I was one, but I wasn't one of the 10 best. So, and I was probably closer to the end of 400 than the very top, but still one of the very best. And it's hard to stand out and shine in that league, even when you're one of the best players in the world, because there's so much great talent there. But you know, I had moments against lots of really incredible players, some of the very best to ever play the games. They just didn't all get strung together night after night like they do for guys like Jimmy Butler or Dwayne Wade. So I'm thankful that somebody remembered that and put that up there, because I'm sure if somebody wanted to put together a Jim McElvain gets dunked on highlight compilation, they could do that too.
Well, you know, and speaking of your sizable contract that you signed with Seattle, I know there was some consternation about that amongst, you know, members of the league. And I know I had read that Sean Kemp was unhappy about it, but I'd read your comments that, you know, that was really something that was generated by the media. But, I mean, you know, there was some backlash about the money that you got from Seattle. Did that criticism ever bother you, or did you just deflect that, or how'd you handle that?
Oh, it really didn't. Honestly, there was no animosity between Sean and I. He'd come over to my house for dinner. He and I still keep in contact. I think there may have been some frustration with him, but it was more directed at his agent and the deal that his agent made him sign, and his agent's lack of knowledge of the cyclical nature of contracts in the NBA and when the salary cap was going to open up on various teams. And anybody who thinks that I got a bad deal will also be the same people who will tell you I had the very best agent in the NBA. And he knew. He knew his business. He knew the business. He knew it extremely well. And he timed everything perfectly. I had an offer for 3 years as a rookie with Washington, and he said, no, you're going to sign a one-year deal. I said, but there's more money in the three. He said, I know. You're going to sign a one-year deal. And then the next year, I was a restricted free agent, because after your first contract, you became a restricted free agent, meaning your team could match whatever offer any other team gave you after your first contract. So if I had a 3-year deal, I'd have to wait 3 years to be a restricted agent. And so after my first year, I received a $525,000 offer from the Minnesota Timberwolves, because Kevin Garnett was going to be a rookie there. Kevin McHale had me in to work me out and knew me and wanted me to kind of be like an older brother. Even though I wasn't that much older than Kevin Garnett, he wanted me to be a positive influence and a guy who was really going to challenge Kevin every day in practice, and I was happy to be that role player. And I really wanted to go to Minnesota, and I'm one of the few guys, unfortunately, in the NBA who would have said, I really want to go to Minnesota, because nobody wants to go to Minnesota. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people want to go to the Bucks, because when you see all the top free agents signing, they're all looking at the major markets, they're all looking at the income tax-free states, and those states and those teams have dominated the NBA championships for years and years and years. But Washington waited till the very last day of my restricted free agency, and they matched the offer from Minnesota. So I went back and played in Washington for one more year. But then after my second contract, after 2 years in the league, I was an unrestricted free agent. So I could go anywhere for any amount of money I wanted. And my agent knew when that came up, there was going to be a lot of salary cap room in Seattle. There was going to be a lot of salary cap room in Cleveland. There was going to be salary cap room in Miami. There was going to be salary cap room in Houston. And Miami didn't come after me. They went after Juwan Howard and some other guys. But all those other teams I mentioned came after me, and two of them offered more money than Seattle did. Seattle was in the finals the year before, and I really wanted to win a championship. You get into that kind of money, it's like Monopoly money. And I, you know, I get that vibe whenever I'm around Jimmy Butler. It's like, it's just crazy. It's crazy how much money there is.
Yeah.
But, you know, so with all that settled, it's like, well, then what do you want? You want to win a championship. I was realistic to know that I might be a decent NBA player at some point in my career. I'd probably never be an all-star, but I could get on a team that could win a championship. And so I went out to Seattle because that's really what I wanted. And I've never met a guy who I played with or played against in the NBA who is in any way disappointed that I got the money that I did. Because if, you know, they were a better player than me, the next time their contract was up, they knew they were going to get more money because of the money that I got. And me, I would take that back. The one exception was Charles Barkley, who told me he was going to fire his mom for having him too early. but everybody else, you know, the guys that weren't at the end of their careers and knew they had more contracts coming, were going to benefit from the contract that I had, just like I did, because somebody else had a bigger deal before me. And that's, you know, the way the league has gone on now. And the money is so huge now. And I know they said that when I signed my deal, that, you know, my contract, nobody would have even probably batted an eye at it, because that's what starting centers make if there's something wrong with them, and they may not play the whole season now because the money's big.
Hey, Jim, I know, and we got to let you go. We really appreciate your time, but you've done such a great job on the radio with Steve Homer True, and I know you're leaving the Marquette basketball program now. What are your future plans? What's in store for you now and your family?
Well, I actually started a podcast. It's called the Marked Men Podcast, MARQED, with another Marquette alum, John Scott Lewinsky, and we've got almost 20, we've recorded at least 20 podcasts. We haven't got them all up yet. And so he and I are doing that, and that's kind of just a fun thing that he and I do the way we look at it is, we may be dead someday and our grandkids or great-grandkids may never know us, but we'll record this podcast, and then they'll be kind of like that time capsule where they can listen and find out what great-grandpa was all about. And so that's really the reason that we've done it. It may turn into another opportunity that could go in a direction I've never anticipated. But for now, it's just going to be that. And I'm going to head off to Florida with my wife and kids, and we're going to spend a couple years being close to Disney World, and then we're going to probably head over to Texas and raise a couple of basketball and volleyball players.
That's awesome. Well, hey, listen, again, it's a pleasure to talk to you. You've meant a lot to the program, both on and off the court. And I'm excited. My son's going to Marquette in the fall, and so I'm going to be at a lot of Marquette basketball games over the next 4 years. I wish you were going to be there, but I know you'll be there in some fashion. So, pleasure to talk to you.
I'll be there a couple times because my daughter's going to be a freshman at Marquette next year, too.
Oh, nice. Well, maybe we can hook up for lunch or something sometime.
You're buying.
Hey, you made more money than I did, okay?
It was your idea.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, Jim, it's a pleasure. Have a great day, and hopefully I'll talk to you again down the road.
All right, thank you. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.